I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, I'll share a few of my thoughts in my Can I Just Tell You essay. That's a little later in the program. But now we turn to the latest in our series for Women's History Month. As women around the world are rethinking and rewriting their own stories, we decided we wanted to explore how the lives of notable women reflect those changes. All month long, we are digging into biographies of divas and dancers, leaders of nations and queens of fashion. And we start today with Joan Myers Brown and the audacious hope of the Black Ballerina. The author is Brenda Dixon Gottschild, and she is with us now. Brenda Dixon Gottschild, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Now, if you are a fan of dance, then you probably know the name Joan Myers Brown. She's the founder of the Philadelphia Dance Company, or Philadanco. It's a ballet-based contemporary dance company. It's known for opening its doors to dancers of all races and backgrounds. So known, well known to you, why did you decide to write this book, and why now?
Well, Joan Myers Brown is an incredible kind of force in her community. I moved to Philadelphia in the mid-80s. I was made aware of her pervasive influence in that community, and then I began to recognize her importance across the nation. Her name would come up, and then I would say, oh yeah, I know this person. Why write about her now? 2010 was the 40th anniversary of her company and the 50th anniversary of her dance school. And she turned 80 just this past December. It seemed to me that if we are going to chronicle and document our sheroes at this time, while they are still alive, I'd better jump on this opportunity.
I want to read a line from the foreword of your book where you declared that becoming a Black ballerina is, quote, a challenge to those who would say, stay in your place, your body and abilities are not capable of doing this, unquote. Could you talk a little bit about just some of the barriers that existed for Black ballerinas like Myers Brown?
Yes, unfortunately, it's not just existed. Many of those barriers are still alive and well. What you quoted from the foreword has something to do with one of the hardwired distortions, I would say, in ballet consciousness, saying that there's certain types of bodies that are right for ballet and certain other types of bodies that aren't. And that stereotype has channeled the ideal type as a very, very thin, elongated, non-Black person, let's say. And what we know, though, what people know who study dance, who study any moving discipline, is that bodies can be trained and changed through study, through dance practice. And certainly there is no stereotypical Black body. We, like all other people, have different shaped feet, different alignment of our bodies. That's why you take ballet class, in order to come to a certain aesthetic. And my premise is that it's possible for anybody.
So how did she even get her training, by the way, given all of that?
In the African-American community, little Black girls were studying ballet the same as little white girls were at ballet studios in their neighborhoods. And there was a strong tradition in the Philadelphia Black community to learn and perform ballet, obviously in segregated circumstances because they couldn't take classes in the white community. But there were wonderful Black dance studios that taught ballet as well as other forms of dance from the 1920s. So this is a long tradition in Black Philadelphia that these people are going to bring this kind of white aesthetic into the Black community, and we will teach it to our own. And yes, we can own it, just as that community can own, I don't know, Duke Ellington or James Brown or what have you. They can boogie, and we can play Brahms and do ballet.
At some point, though, she had to have come to this, you know, terrible realization that despite her talent and love of the art, that there were doors that were going to be closed to her that would not have been closed to her had she been someone else. Can you just talk about how did this become apparent to her and what she decided to do about it?
Oh boy, really sad stories in this way. First of all, she had tried to take classes in the 1950s at the White Ballet Studios in Philadelphia, and the doors were closed to her. Anthony Tudor, very wonderful choreographer and teacher, English, had come to America in the 1940s. He would come once a week to give classes to the Ballet Guild, the 1940s and 1950s in Philadelphia. And he allowed these black dancers who had been training in their community to take classes with him. And that was the only integrated dance classes that were happening in Philadelphia at that time. He even cast Joan Myers Brown and one other African-American ballerina in the corps de ballet of Les Sylphides, a very classical ballet. And there's a review that comes out in one of the local newspapers that says the ballet was fine except for, quote, the flies in the buttermilk.
Oh, my goodness.
I know, I know. And this is not, you know, Mississippi or whatever. This is Philadelphia in the late 1950s. Joan Myers Brown is devastated, but she's like a really positive, keep on keeping on kind of person. So she realizes that she's not even going to try to do ballet with this kind of stigma over her head. She's given an offer from somebody to join a chorus line in a nightclub in New Jersey. So interestingly enough, to make a long story short, she goes from ballerina to nightclubs to, after 15 years of touring with upscale nightclub shows, Cab Calloway's Reviews, Pearl Bailey, Sammy Davis Jr., she toured with all of these people. She, after 15 years of that kind of career, she decides, I want to go back home to Philly. I want to open a dance school and give other black kids the opportunities that maybe will be there for them now that I didn't have. She opens this dance school in 1960. She trains and trains and trains a cadre of incredible dancers, some of whom then go on to dance in dance companies all across the country, but some of them who want to stay in Philadelphia. So 10 years later, 1970, she starts this company, the Philadelphia Dance Company, Philadanko.
Okay. If you're just joining us, it's our latest Women's History Month biography conversation. We're speaking with Professor Brenda Dixon Gottschild, and we're talking about her book, Joan Myers Brown and the Audacious Hope of the Black Ballerina. I want to talk a little bit about that. You know, a lot of artists have to struggle to make their art. You know, it's
yes.
There's, you know, auditions, it's no. It's you're not good enough for this part, it's no. It's I just want to talk a little bit about the audacious hope for a minute. How did she hold on to that audacious hope to allow her to not just open the school, but then found a company?
This is where we turn then to the whole strength of community. Her community allowed her the strength to go on. She indeed had to deal with a city that didn't open the doors the way one would have assumed, even in the 1960s. And in terms of funding for her company, she has to struggle with that constantly. But then, as Joan herself says, I will see some little kid at my school who's, you know, 5 years old, a little girl, and she'll say, oh, Ms. Brown, you know, I just can't wait until I can dance in Philadanko. And she says, that keeps me going. So it's that sense that there's an ongoingness and continuity, a line of potential ballerinas who are in the wings waiting to have the opportunity, and she is still trying to make it happen for them. So this idea of people who were relegated to minority status economically and politically could have the audacity to hope to be a ballerina, or if you will, a president. and you know, precepts of survival, freedom, and hope. And those are the things that continue to drive and feed our communities.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about what you think Philadanko has added to the dance landscape.
In chapter 4 in the book, I talk about the Philadanko aesthetic, and I do indeed feel that what this company has done is that it's brought a certain way of approaching dance that has to do with a brashness, a toughness, a young kind of energy. Somebody called it do or die dancing. You dance as though your life depended on it. And this is all because of the way they are trained by Joan Myers Brown. And because the company is now a national and an internationally known quotient, what it means is that this Filadanko aesthetic is something that is spread across the nation. Also, I must mention that also the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater has many, many dancers who have come there from Filadanko.
I was going to say, the people who have seen either Alvin Ailey or Filadanko will note, though, that these companies are diverse. They are not exclusively African American. And I want to ask, what about that? Talk about that.
You can't talk about the need for integration if you're not doing it at every level. I mean, the other thing, Michelle, is that a dance company like Filadanko or the Ailey Company, if you will, these are the places where we as a nation could really begin to understand that integration is not something that has to be far off, that there is a way in which we already all participate in the kind of love of the same kinds of forms.
You know, we started our conversation when I was asking you why you wanted to write this book and why now, and you said this generation of pioneers will not always be with us, and if we want to get these stories down of our sheroes, as you said, we need to do it. Was there a challenge of writing about somebody who's still around to critique your work?
Right. Well, certainly, I'm sure Joan Myers Brown could write another book about all kinds of things that didn't go into this book. But it seemed to me really important, and she did see all of the interviews that I had done with her so that she could censor anything that she wanted to. But it did seem really important to me at this point in our time and in American history that this book be out there while she's alive so that, you know, she can gather her credits at this point. And certainly, it's so important to be able to interview these people now.
Did she censor anything?
So few things. It was incredible. But I mean, she did say to me some incredible things in the last chapter. And I thought she was going to censor them, and she didn't.
What would you like people to draw from your monumental work, I have to say? Many years of research, a lot of very detailed research and some thoughtful meditations, not just about dance, but also about the role that dance plays in this society,
Thank you.
I have to say. But what do you want people to draw from your work?
I would like that it's understood there is a life and a lifeblood that continues and that allows us to, through the lens of dance, be able to understand how our culture operates, and to understand also that with this Joan Myers Brown example, that we all have histories and lives that warrant this kind of study.
Brenda Dixon Gottschild is the author of Joan Myers Brown and the Audacious Hope of the Black Ballerina. Professor Gottschild is also Professor Emerita of Dance Studies at Temple University in Philadelphia, but we caught up with her in Costa Mesa, California. Professor Gottschild, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thank you.